I always tell people if you can get as many loans, conventional loans in your name, because those are the best terms. You get a fixed interest rate. And mm-hmm. as we know it right now, interest rates have gone up significantly. So it was almost like the deals that I got at those low cost fixed interest rates was my asset. You know, the asset itself, the house itself is an asset, but mm-hmm. I really say that interest rate was my asset because now I have, you know, a 3% interest rate for 30 years and they can't change that.
Who's this? Oh, you're an entrepreneur? Oh, you're a real estate investor? Oh, you're trying to learn from those who did it? Well, come into the lab then. Put your white coat on, gloves on, notepad, and let's build, y'all.
Awesome. Real Estate Experiment, what is happening, y'all? Today, I have the pleasure of having a true practitioner who did not bring her lab coat in today, but that does not mean she's not going to come into the lab and drop as many gems as possible, because today we have Dr. Nancy Nguyen in the lab with us, and I'm so excited to really talk about the experiments that you've endured, not only in your career, but in the real estate arena, and you're actually taking it a step further, and you're having a real true impact with the investing that you've done. So without further ado, Nancy, welcome to the lab. How are you doing today?
I am doing awesome, Ruben. Thank you so much for having me. And I do apologize that I did not wear my white coat, but I am all yours and I am here for the experiment.
Listen, I think, you know, you go beyond the white coat, right? Because it's one thing to have the white coat, but it's also another thing to really, truly deliver as a practitioner. And I know that you're not going to fall short of that today. If you're going to go above and beyond as you do with all the work that you do. So where are you dialing in from? Fill us in, Nancy. We're talking about this offline. You're dialing in from Georgia. Is that right?
Yep. Atlanta, Georgia. Based in Atlanta, Georgia. Really, awesome. I'm originally from Southern California, born and raised in Los Angeles. Oh. Yeah.
You know what's crazy? I say hustle in the East, invest in the South, rest in the West. So are we on track here? Or you kind of flipped the script a little bit? Is that, well, how did Georgia happen?
Yeah. So I did kind of flip the script, I guess.
You did.
Yeah.
But you started hustling in the East, right? Because you went to Harvard. You're a doctor, you're a physician, you're a mom. You specialize in vision, which is, it's such great, like, your branding is so on point. I have to say, I was like, when I looked at it, I was like, what? That is awesome. It's, you know, clear vision investing, but you're obviously that comes from somewhere. So I just want to take a step back because you did start hustling in the East. That's where you get your education. And I want to find out a little bit, you know, when did the experiments begin? Like this whole experimenting in real estate thing. Can you kind of walk us through that transition of kind of like your career and that also that bridge?
Yeah, absolutely. So to keep it short and simple for you and your audience. So my parents came here as refugees from Vietnam after the war. So they landed eventually in California after multiple stops in different states being sponsored by church sponsors. So we ended up in Los Angeles. I spent the first 17 years of my life there until I went out to college. So during college, I had the discovery that I really like science, but I didn't want to be stuck in a lab. I know we're talking about experiments there. I did do a lot of lab experiments and basic science experiments, but I really wanted to interact with people and use that science to help people. And I decided I wanted to become a doctor. So went on to medical school in Boston, also trained in Boston in ophthalmology, which is vision and the eyes. And, you know, at each step along the way, I mean, like, I am going to get there. So when I finally finished training, I came out and I was like poofed up. I'm like, I am here. After all this hard work, I'm settled. Like, this is it. And then as I love what I do on a daily basis, helping patients and everything, but I quickly realized that I was not in as much control of my life or my career as I thought. Medicine has changed so much over the decades that really practitioners, doctors, nurses, you know, dentists, you name it, don't really have a lot of control. It's no longer a patient-doctor relationship. I say it's a patient-doctor relationship and probably 17 other people, the insurance companies, the administrators, you know, a lobby group. So you have to deal with a lot of that. And just like everyone else in a job, I was one email away from telling me my reimbursements were going to be cut. Or just like during COVID, within 24 hours, I was told to stop seeing patients, stop operating on patients. So my income stream was essentially at risk. And I realized that all along, and it really came to a climax during COVID. And that's when I say I had to find an alternative route, right? I have to find a way to make passive income so my financial earnings is not dependent on me putting on those scrubs, putting on that white coat every day to see the patients. I love that. I love what I do as that, but also that was not going to provide the security that I needed. And that's how real estate came into play.
That's so interesting because it's so interesting because it's so relative, right? And see, like, I think there's so many people who might be listening to this podcast at a different level. You might be, you know, well, first of all, I think a lot of that conversation happens. It doesn't matter what career, like it's a, could be a higher paying job. It could be, you know, mid-tier, it could be low, like whatever the case might be, wherever you fall, the keyword that I heard was control. And I think that's an interesting kind of variable that we can isolate and just kind of talk about regardless of where you are. It could be whether you're super, super young, or maybe it's your first job, or maybe you're 30 years into your career. I think that that kind of pretty much is something that we can all relate with or relate to, I should say. So now I'm trying to think, because I have to say, like, I really admire, you know, I have a few doctors in the family. I really admire the patience and the grit. I mean, the commitment. I mean, it's not an easy career. And then obviously you're doing it for such a good thing on the other side. You know, you went to school for how long now, Nancy?
I've lost count, but probably over 20 plus years. You know, basically after high school, there's 4 years of college, 4 years of medical school. And then depending on the specialty that you train in, it could be anywhere from 3 to 12 years, if not longer. You could keep subspecialty training. So if you add it all out, like 8 plus 12, 20 plus years altogether.
So for me, that's so interesting because I feel like that in itself, it's like you've committed and you're in there and you're kind of giving away some control. Did you feel that going to your career, or did you just like, this is part of the process and I'm actually just trusting the process? This is what it takes for me to then get to the other side. Like, I'm just curious as to like what you're thinking, because I really respect it. I'm like, there's no way I could do that for that long, but I'm just thinking, like, what is your thought process when you're going through that for someone else who's going through it?
Yes, that's a great question, Ruben. And I've thought about this a lot over the last couple of years. It's almost like when you enter that state that I'm going to become a doctor, you become so committed that you put blinders on. And there's a lot of sacrifice, as you mentioned. So most of us who become doctors sacrifice our 20s. We get into six figures of student debt, right? We miss birthday parties, family events, vacations, sleep, dinner parties, you know, all that for this one goal of becoming a doctor. I feel like the system is structured so that you kind of grind it out. And I don't necessarily think it has to be that way, but it's just what has been ingrained in the system. So in terms of the thought process, like, you know, for me, it was like, I have this one goal. I want to become a doctor. And I know I have to jump through these hoops. It's a pretty linear path. You know, if you think about it, everything is set forth before you, like go to college and then you got to apply to medical school, go to medical school, and then you got to apply to your residency. Yes, you have choices in between, but for the most part, it's kind of laid out before you. And so I think a lot of us who enter medicine go in knowing that there is this path laid out before us. So when we get out practicing, it's almost like, wow, we have a choice now of what we want to do. And it creates kind of a dilemma of, wow, I have this choices now. So I could practice this way or this way, or not practice at all, or practice half time. And I think the key to note with all this, to relate to all your audience, is when you have that financial stability and freedom, you get to choose what you want to do. So I know doctors who are stuck in their jobs because they're dependent on that paycheck every 2 weeks. They hate it. They hate their situation, but they can't get out of it because they're so tied to that golden handcuffs. But if you think about when you have that freedom to choose without the financial considerations, that's when your true passions and what you really want to do come out. And I think that's the key point to take away. Yeah, as a roundabout way of answering your question, but
So good. I love that because it actually paints a picture of, okay, this is part of the process. It's, you know, it's a grind. And then I love what you said. It's like, okay, when you're out there, now you have options. It's almost like the blinders off. And it's like, oh my goodness. Like, I don't have to, you know, I don't have to let the system control me. Now I have options. And now that I have options, I'm thinking, is this the only option? Is this the best option? I love what you said, Nancy, because it made me think of, you know, don't quote me on this. I forget who said this, but it was something along the lines of, you know, humans generally have really good intentions. You know, they mean for the most part, right? Obviously there's obviously always some exceptions, but for the most part, we want to do good, but we're often caught up in that kind of like the system, or maybe it's the rat race, and all of our great energy gets depleted so that we don't even have time to really devote time to our passion or to actually commit to doing good. And so it's really interesting that when you do have the financial freedom, it's fascinating, isn't it, of the amount of great that you could do. And it kind of ties in, like it's all coming together. I had a conversation with a friend today where it was just like, you know, being wealthy, you know, when you're doing it spiritually from a great place, it's thinking about how many people I can help when I get to that point, not so much like what I will do with it. And I obviously think you're way more qualified to talk about that impact that you're having. But before we even go there, I still want to build on kind of like your story, because I think it's so fascinating. So I want to understand at what point that seed was planted, because you talked about control, but there's a lot of different ways now, especially in this day and age, to get control in a lot of different things, right? People are making money online. Like people are obviously real estate's been around forever. It's proof of concept, but we've all been introduced to it differently. What was your introduction to real estate and what type specifically, so that we're clear for Experiment Nation?
Yes. Yeah, so I researched a lot. So I've always been very diligent about my finances, did all the right thing, right? Like the blinders on, what I'm used to in my medical career. Like I'm told to do this. Yeah. Check off the box. I'm there. You know, I paid off my debts, put money, stock money in the 401k, IRAs, but I saw how volatile the stock market was. And I really didn't understand it that much. And I was like, wait a minute, this doesn't quite make sense if I'm putting my money in here and it's going to be locked up until, you know, I'm 60 something until I could get it. Wait, that doesn't make sense. So I started digging deeper and I came across real estate. You know, I researched all the methods. There's many methods, right? Like short-term rentals, flipping, wholesaling. I kind of researched all those and even got a little foothold of trying to wholesale. But I'm like, wait a minute, I'm busy enough. I don't have time to like calling these sellers and stuff like that. And then I finally came to the conclusion that I was going to be a buy and hold investor, a long-term buy and hold investor. So I developed a team and including a realtor, a lender, property manager, and then got my first property a couple of months after I started this whole process. And it really gave me the proof of concept.
I love that proof of concept, like a true practitioner in the lab. See, I can make this up, guys. I'm not making this up. No, because I really do. I do pay attention, Nancy, when people speak, especially people like you who are very, you know, hold a lot of value and a lot of merit in their work, in their body of work. So you said a few things. You said, and I don't actually, I was looking for the keyword, but what I paraphrase from that is like, you were always kind of a student of the game, right? It seemed like if someone told you, like, if you studied something, if it makes sense, okay, great. I'm actually really good at being a student applying it, right? And I can see how that transitions over with, again, your discipline of becoming a doctor, which again is why we have this lab, because it's, you know, what information are you listening to? Because if you do follow the right information and you are disciplined, I think that's the word I was looking for, then you will get the right results. But if you do what you've always done, you'll get what you always got. So
exactly.
Let's talk about this property for a second. Buy and hold, what did you start with? Is this a residential? Is this a multifamily? Like, just give us some context here so we understand kind of like how you broke it down.
Yes, it's a residential multifamily. So it's a two-door or a duplex. And it was right in my backyard in Atlanta, about 25, 30 minutes away from where I live. So Researched the areas, knew it was a very high demand rental area, but not too bad of a neighborhood. And it's up
where is this, coming. By the way?
This is in Marietta, Georgia.
Yeah, Marietta. That's awesome.
Yeah. And you know, with the Braves stadium moving there a couple years ago, that whole area has just moved towards gentrification and the values have just started to improve. So I know I was along the path of progress and the demand would be very high there. So that was my first property.
Path of progress. Okay, great. And I love how you said it. You kind of set us up there. You said it was a proof of concept. So then, you know, what was that next experiment? Because you started, and I love that you started with a proof of concept, as we all should. And this is why we have, you know, someone like you in the lab to show us this proof of concept. How did you take it to the next level?
Yeah, so just to expound on that proof of concept, what it provided me with that proof of concept, what exactly that was the cash flow. Every month I saw, even though it wasn't a lot, I saw that I was able to get money, mailbox money, or in that case, ACH direct deposit money without me having to go to work, right? I didn't have to take an extra shift or see an extra patient or do an extra surgery to earn that money. So I really got a taste of what passive income was. And that was when I was hooked. And at the end of the year, I also saw the significant benefits of depreciation. So even though I was making that cash flow and collecting money in my pocket to the government, I was able to take a paper loss and show that I wasn't making any money. So my mind was blown, you know, that was the experiment and that proof of concept that it worked. So check off in the lab book, so to say. And so when I saw all that proof of concept, I was like, this works, like I'm going to keep going. So I added to the portfolio, buying more duplexes, a couple of single families, and then just scale from there. Along the path, I also discovered syndications, multifamily syndications, because I knew multifamily was the way I wanted to go eventually, because of many reasons, right? Like if one unit is vacant, you're not stuck paying the bill for everything. If you own a single family, if it's vacant, okay, go from 100% income to zero versus a multifamily.
Did you experience that, by the way? Did you experience that? I know that that's a common risk that is super valid, but I'm curious.
Yeah. So fortunately my properties are in pretty high demand areas, but yeah, it experienced about 3 weeks of vacancy in one of my single family, just the turnaround to get, you know, especially during COVID, get contractors in there to patch up things and get it rent ready. They don't usually take the small jobs anymore. So you have to find the right person to do it. So it took a little bit to turn over. And then to find someone to rent it to. So even in a high demand area, it took a couple of weeks and went from, as I said, 100% income to zero overnight for almost a month. Yeah.
And that's such a good point that we don't talk enough about, especially for long-term rentals, like when we're talking, and again, residential, but smaller kind of units, it's that time, you know, that you're not able to rent it out is that, you know, opportunity cost that you could have had if you had someone in there. That is maybe, and I'd be curious to hear, do you feel like that would wipe off what you would have made for that year? Or does it just kind of really break even at that point when you lose that month? Like, how critical is it for those who are listening who might not think, oh, no, it's fine, everything's going well for now? You want to maybe shed a little bit of light of what that would look like numbers wise?
Right. So when you're analyzing a property in the beginning to see if it makes sense, it's not just what I get for rent and what I have to pay for the mortgage. You have to account for multiple things that includes property taxes, property management, but also vacancy. So in my underwriting, I always account for 1 month of vacancy. Whether that's true or not, I say it's going to be a month vacant for the year. And I make that into my calculations and considerations when I'm analyzing a property. Other things to include are CapEx expenses. So even though the AC is working out just fine right now, it doesn't mean it's going to last forever. So you kind of have to allot a certain amount every month or a percentage every month into your calculations to make sure that's accounted for, because you don't want to be like, I'm doing fine, and all of a sudden you're stuck with an $8,000 bill for something, or if the roof goes off or something like that.
Or we just had like I think it was like something with our toilet cost us like $1,600. It's like, what? But so let me ask you, just because we like to give a little bit of tactical advice here in the lab. Like, you know, you since you went there for 2 seconds, then I want to get right into the multifamily syndication. The CapEx, what's a good rule of thumb for you that you typically would run it at, you know, so that you're kind of have some reserves for those?
Yeah, absolutely. It just depends on the age of the property. So if it's a newer property that most of the CapEx has already been done or the major systems are very new, I would say 5% is pretty good. But if it's an older property, it could be anywhere from 8 to even 15%. I would say anywhere from 5 to 10% is a reasonable, you know, of the monthly rent. Or if you just want to, sometimes monthly rent is not the best way to calculate, because if the monthly rent is really low, then, you know, it doesn't matter if you have a $700 property versus a $2,000, the roof is going to cost the same. So it doesn't necessarily translate. So setting aside a specific amount is better, I think. You know, for instance, if you're like $200 a month, I think it's pretty reasonable, you know, for CapEx.
What's your, just because I'm so jaded now, I'm so in the short-term rental space. What's a cash flowing rule of thumb for you for long-term rental? Again, residential, and then we're going to get to the bigger multifamily. What would be a good metric? Again, we understand we're all in different markets. I just want to take the opportunity while I have Nancy in the lab from Georgia.
Yeah, it's very market dependent, as you said, Ruben. You could go to some markets and you could, you know, kick it out of the waters, you know, infinite return sometimes even, right? If you do the burr strategy, even within the same market, for instance, in Atlanta, it depends on the neighborhood. If you're in more of a war zone, you're going to get higher returns. You know, as they say in real estate, the higher returns, the more risk. And that includes where your properties are in terms of your tenant base, et cetera. So for me, I like to invest in kind of B-class neighborhoods, very working class, high demand, but with a good tenant base who usually pay rent on time. And usually I go, the first deal was great because cash on cash was like 15%, something crazy like that. So I would spoil my first deal, but we know the Atlanta market is very hot right now. So I say anywhere from 7 to 10% cash on cash is good for me.
Gotcha. Okay. That's good. That's good. All right. So now one of the things that you talked about, Nancy, because I want to get to the meat and potatoes here. you bought one, you had a proof of concept, you bought another. You mind sharing with us kind of like the financing? Is this something where did you leverage equity from one property to another? Did you get an investment property loan? Did you get portfolio loan? Like, what did that look like before you transitioned into multifamily? So we get some context of how someone can even scale up to the point that you're at.
I always tell people, if you can get as many loans, conventional loans in your name, because those are the best terms. You get a fixed interest rate. And as we know it right now, interest rates have gone up significantly. So it was almost like the deals that I got at those low cost fixed interest rates was my asset. You know, the asset itself, the house itself is an asset, but I really say that interest rate was my asset, because now I have, you know, a 3% interest rate for 30 years and they can't change that. So I'm going to be paying money, the same cost every month on the mortgage from year one to year 30. And we know that the inflation always rises, right? With the way things are going right now. So the dollars that I'm paying at year 15, year 30 is a lot less compared to what I pay now. Yeah. So I usually each person is allowed up to 10, depending on your debt to income ratio. And if you hit that, it might be less than that. But if you can, I would strongly suggest getting a residential loan if you're, you know, working in the residential space, which is 1 to 4 units. That's what I did, you know, for my first couple of properties. I kind of maxed out on that and then had to go to more commercial lenders, you know, to get
your typical 20% down and conventional loan.
Correct.
Do you believe, I'm curious, in this market, because from the interest rate perspective, what is your thought of a property right now that we talk a lot about return on investment, but sometimes not so much about return on equity? So what's your thought process if you invest in Marietta? I mean, the price, you know, values are going up. As we know, there's no supply and you got this really nice interest rate, like a really sweet one that you locked in, but you also got tons of equity that's built up. What is your thought process with that?
It's a tough question because as you kind of allude to, the equity that you have locked up in the property, for instance, putting 25% down, right? And then with the appreciation, you're like, gosh, it's just sitting in the house and you can't access it to do anything. But if the interest rates were lower, it's an easy no-brainer, right? To refinance it and pull that equity out. But because of the rising interest rates, one really has to look at what is the cost of that and is it worth it? And as of right now, unless you've held the property for really long and have gained significant equity, probably not so much because you're at a higher interest rate and the amount that you could pull out is, by the time you pay all the fees and stuff, is probably insignificant. So it really depends on the individual situation is what I'm trying to say. Not trying to dodge your question, Ruben.
No. I just want to know what Nancy does because I like what Nancy does. Yeah. So Nancy, so you've really leveraged, by the way, how many prop residentials did you have before you jumped into multifamily for context?
A good handful, probably like a, 10 or so. Yeah.
All in Georgia?
No, but it was kind of in tandem. So I discovered the syndications and I was like, yeah, probably I'm going to jump ship because this landlording thing, even with a property manager, is a lot of work.
Wow. So, interesting.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. So I think you got our attention there, especially some of us who might be tuning in because they're like in that exact same situation, mm-hmm. or maybe they're like, they going the long-term hold route residential and they're thinking, I don't know. I just don't see it. So let's talk about this multifamily syndication because there's that leap is where people often, it's a different kind of leap. So mm-hmm. we want to kind of hear it from you. Like how do I prepare, mentally, physically to take on that leap? What is the next proof of concept that I can do, right? What did you do?
First and foremost, no matter what you do in this investing space, is get educated. There's no better investment than to get educated. No one can take that away from you. And the more educated you are, the more confident you are. But with that education, you have to take action. So if you get all this, you read all this stuff, you listen to all these podcasts, and you don't take action, you never know if it's right for you. Even if you have to pivot, at least you took that first step. And then you look at the next step of, where do I have to go? Is this right for me? If it's not, then you pivot and then you try something else after getting educated. So education is key. So I got myself really educated, reading books and everything, and even joined a mentorship program because I was thinking about, buying some active, larger multifamily properties myself. So you learn a lot of the underwriting and what you need to look at, even as a passive investor. So once I got the education, it was another experiment, just like we're talking about. I just put my money in with a syndicator that had vetted and said, okay, I'm going to put my trust in you. I've done all my due diligence and see where it goes. And I was just blown away. Like the returns that you get are almost equivalent, if not better than you purchasing your own properties. And I don't have to put the property in my name. The liability is not on me. I don't get the calls about the broken heaters and whether to approve it, the broken toilet. So it was like life-changing, especially as a busy professional. I mean, being a landlord was almost like getting myself into another job.
Yeah.
So it was,
I love that you're saying that because that's why, when I opened up the lab, it was okay. Real estate is one thing, right? But then within a real estate, there are so many umbrellas, right? And some umbrellas are way more active than others. Some are passive, some are active. Even, you talk about short-term rentals. If you don't have the proper team in place, it's not a passive. It's not a passive business, right? Flipping homes is definitely not passive. That's a job, right? So I think just understanding that, that's kind of why we have the lab. Now I'm interested, you talk about proof of concept of residential. It sounds like the proof of concept for you was to actually get in as a limited partner. Am I correct?
Mm-hmm. Correct. That's correct.
Awesome. Do you mind just sharing with our audience who may not be familiar? I know we've kind of had multiple episodes in the short-term rentals and we have a lot of different, just to kind of refresh their minds of like, what is truly a limited partner, to give a little bit of context?
Yeah. So let's take a step back a little bit and talk about what a real estate syndication is. So a real estate syndication in very simple terms, is just a group investment. So say you want to buy a 200 unit apartment building or a large hotel, any one investor would probably not be able to afford that unless you're super, super rich and independently wealthy. Most people cannot afford to buy that all on their own. So what a syndication does is basically brings together a group of investors to buy a property that they otherwise would not be able to individually. And so within that team, there are two main players. There are the sponsors or the general partners, GPs, and then there are the limited partners or the LPs, who are also known as the passive investors. So there's a great analogy of what a syndication is and how it works in comparing it to a plane ride. So let's say I want to fly from Atlanta to where you are currently in the Boston area. We all want to go to the same destination. And I, you know, want to fly in a Boeing 474, 747, 474. I wouldn't be able to afford that on my own. But if I could bring together a group of passengers, we're able to afford that ride. And we all have the same goal of going to the same destination. It's the same thing with syndications. We all want the property to do well and make great returns, and we're going to do that together. So what happens is that the general partners is likened to the pilot who drive the plane. If there's a turbulence in the weather or there's an unexpected, you know, engine going out, they have to take care of it. You know, as the passengers, you don't do anything. You're just going along for the ride. You pay that plane ticket, or in this case with a syndication, you pay your investment in it and you're along for the ride. But together, you take it to the property to a new level so that you get the returns among these group of investors. So that's kind of what, you know, GPLP syndication works. So as a passive investor, you pretty much put your money in and let the sponsors or the GPs take over and manage the property and run the business plan.
That's such a good analogy, by the way. Like I really love that because I love painting pictures. That's a very neat visual concept. So you find yourself now, and again, this is for everyone also in your community, as you know, a lot of doctors or busy professionals, you find yourself putting your money to work and you're no longer, right? Because people think of real estate and think, well, what about when someone calls you, etc.? There is no strings attached here. Like it's completely passive. So now you've gotten a taste of residential. We've got a couple hundreds from that a month. Then you're getting into syndication as a limited partner. You talk about that drastic difference. Can you explain that difference, and also what are some of the other benefits that you see residential doesn't have, so we could have some context as that bridge?
Absolutely. So let me talk about two differences. So I'm going to talk about residential versus commercial, and then I'm going to talk about active versus passive real estate investing. So let's first talk about the residential versus commercial. So residential is defined, as your audience may know, as 1 to 4 units. So your single family, duplex, triplex, quads, all classified as residential. And then commercial is anything 5 units and above in kind of what we're talking about. So in the residential space, how are properties valued? If you think about it, right? It's, oh, the neighbor across the street sold for, you know, 50K more than I paid for it. I guess my value is worth as much as that. I didn't do anything, but great. You know, you just ride along with the market. There is some income approach, but that's typically not how the values, how the properties are valued. So for instance, I have a single family home that I bought and I did nothing to it, and it's appreciated over 100K, you know, just by sitting there and just by riding the market appreciation. This is in contrast to commercial property, so anything 5 units and above, and they base it on your net operating income. So it doesn't matter if the building across the street sold for, you know, 500K more. Your building is its own business in itself. So if you drive up income or decrease your expenses, you increase your net operating income. So you naturally increase your property value, essentially.
Absolutely.
So it's not dependent on the market, nothing like that. So you have total control over driving how your property performs, and then that translates to the eventual value. So that's residential versus commercial. So I'm going to now talk about active versus passive. I think there's key differences, and it's not everyone's cup of tea. You know, you got to have to look at what is right for you and what your personality is and what your investing goals are. That's very important to define as you're thinking about how you want to invest. So as Ruben mentioned before, there's a whole spectrum from active to passive. And then within that, there's a whole spectrum as well, right? You have the very active where you're like flipping, wholesaling. It's very transactional. So if you stop doing that, income stops coming in. Essentially another job, as you said, Ruben.
Yeah. And it's also taxed differently as well.
Exactly. Exactly. Different. And then you have your kind of buy and hold, and then you're self-managing. So you're the landlord. They're calling you for everything. So that's still on the active. And then as we move down a little towards the active, you have your buy and holds, but you hired a property manager. So it was a little less passive, but you're still active because you still have to make the decisions. And as you cross over to the other side, to what I call kind of the more passive side, you have syndications, which is passive, but you still have to do the upfront work about vetting the deals before you invest. So it's not completely passive. And then you have your even more passive, which are the REITs, the real estate investment trusts, that are literally like a stock where you could log on and buy something in with two clicks, and in 10 minutes, you're done.
You like, by the way, can we call those out? Do you like those?
I have some invested in it. However, I do not prefer it if I'm investing in real estate, because you don't own the property. With syndications and with buy and hold, you still own the property. So you get all the benefits with real estate. With a REIT, it's kind of like, you know, buying a mutual fund or a stock. It's taxed that way. So you're buying a stock in the company rather than owning that piece of real estate.
We'll be right back.
Experiment Nation, I always experiment. And the reason why is I'm always trying to find the best tool, the best method, and the best vehicle to help me get to my end goal. One of the tools that we use in the short-term rental space is Guesty for Hosts. Now, Experiment Nation, you know that I love to test things, and I wouldn't be sharing with you anything that I don't use myself. As a short-term rental superhost, Airbnb superhost, listings that we own and co-host at the same time, I can tell you that there's no better software that allows us to streamline our business. Right now, currently, there's actually three properties right now that are currently where guests are checking in, and I'm here with you, and I did not need to send in check-in instructions for these current properties, right? There are multiple ways that you can streamline your operation from on the front end and on the back end, from being able to create a website, from being able to get income reports for your team, to looking at statistics, to setting up auto reviews, to integrating your smart lock so that you don't have to sit here and send every day and remind yourself to send the passcodes for your smart locks. No, instead you can integrate directly the exact same way that you can actually send your cleaners a link so that they don't have to remind themselves when they need to go to cleanings. There's text reminders that go out. There's links that can go out for them. This is a tool that if you're looking to give a smooth experience for your team on the back end, it will truly reflect, and it does for your guests on the front end. Make sure you go to host.guesty.com and use our unique link. Our unique link will be in our bio in the show notes. If you're currently watching this, you'll see it right here at the bottom of my screen. Use this unique link so that you can tell Guesty that I sent you. You don't want to miss out on this. You need a PMS, property management software, in your business if you're looking to operate like a super host that you deserve to be, so that your guests can have the best experience that they deserve to have at your properties. Again, that host.guesty.com. Use our unique link that is here on the screen, in the bio, and in the show notes if you're listening to this, guys. Happy hosting.
Love it. Thanks for calling that out. So yeah, I'm sorry, because you were on a, I mean,
I was on a like, tangent,
but like a good one. I'm talking about Professor Wynn here in the building with us. That was a really good way. You were making your way all the way to passive. Did we get to the fully passive part? Because I think we were just there. I just wanted to add that little.
I think that's kind of.
Yeah.
You know, as passive as you could get, it's just dumping it in a stock, you know, and mm-hmm. saying, you know, kick it and forget it. And then if I want to sell it, I could do that in 10 minutes as well.
Yeah.
Versus a syndication is a little bit more illiquid. It has to be for that whole period of the business plan. So you can't just say, I want to put my money in here. And then tomorrow you're like, wait, I need it for a junior's college education. Never mind. You know, once you put that money in, it's kind of stuck in there for the duration of that project.
Got it. So Nancy, when you got into this, you know, at first you talk about control, which you're now, you're starting to, again, just to be clear, gaining control on your financial freedom, mm-hmm. right? Like towards that. So you're putting your money to work as a limited partner, as a passive investor. At that point, are you thinking like, I may want to control and run my own syndication, or were you just kind of still just, you know, going with the flow here. What was your thought process?
Yeah, my thought process was I just want passive income because that will allow me to live the life that I want. Because once I get that passive income, that monthly cash flow, and then, you know, building up your net worth as well, but is a little less, you know, helping you achieve your financial freedom, so to say, because cash flow is what allows you to puts money in your pocket so you could pay for those bills or, you know, buy whatever you want or reinvest it. So my goal was really, hey, I want passive income so that I could really think about what I want to do, right? What are my passions? And if I want to cut back clinically, I could do that. So it just allows for flexibility and freedom. So that was not my thought process. And you could achieve that multiple ways, as we said, you know, both the active route, which is a little bit more time and labor intensive, or the passive route, and kind of shift it towards the passive route just because of our busy schedules. I have two young kids. So it was just the perfect path. And, you know, I want to reiterate to your audience that it could change throughout the cycle of what you're going through. If you're younger and you're like, I don't have much money, but I have the time and, the muscles, and I want to fix and flip or do the work myself and fix up these properties, do that. But as you get older and maybe advance in your career and start having kids, you're like, probably not the best lifestyle anymore. You could kind of shift your strategy, right? To more passive routes of investing. So there's no right or wrong answer. It just really kind of depends on where you are in life and what your investing goals are.
Sure. So now you founded Clear Vision Capital Group, and I'm assuming now are you the GP on that, or are you co-GPing, or is that something that's, how long have you been doing that for? You know, how did that experiment kind of leap more forward to build on the domino effect that you're building?
It really wasn't intentional, to be honest. Once my circle, especially my physician friends, found out I was doing real estate, they were very intrigued and wanted to learn more. So I initially started telling them, this is how you buy a rental property. Do this, 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 this. And then by step three, it was like their eyes glazed over. It's like, yeah, never mind. You know,
is this at the residential level?
The residential stuff. Yeah. So,
you had already you were sharing already your story with them of what you were up to.
Yeah.
Right?
Cause they're, you know, they always ask, what are you up to? Like, what's new? So I would share, this is what's new. And then they'd be like, I've always wanted to get into real estate. Like, tell me more. How can I get into it? And then I tell them the steps, like, you know, find a broker or a realtor and build up a team and then go look at these properties, put bids on it. You know, if you lose, you might have to overbid and you got to do the inspection. And literally after the second or third step, they're like, forget it, you know,
so because what is it? Why do you think that is, Nancy? Because these are smart people that you're working with, right? Like they're very coachable. They're, you know what I mean? So what do you think it is? Is it just you're burnt out when you come home, you don't have the energy and it takes a lot of commitment? Is it that is it scary? Like, what do you think it is since you're in that circle?
I think most people think of real estate, including physicians, as I'm just going to buy the property, set it and forget it, and then the money will just come, right? But there is a process involved in buying the property, the upfront work, and even the maintenance when you're doing active properties. And as professionals, like doctors and any other busy professionals, they are already so busy at their job. Sometimes they are working 60, 80 hours a week, taking overnight call, taking additional shifts. The last thing they want to do when they get home is to be looking at properties or dealing with tenants. They just want to come home, relax, spend time with their family, and that's it. You know, they don't want to deal with the headaches. So to them, it's almost like not worth it, right? Because most of them are making very good income. So it's like, you know, that cash flow, a couple hundred bucks a month, is not going to significantly make a dent in anything, okay, right? Lifestyle wise. Yeah.
I love that you went there because I want to talk about exactly that. All right. So it's so important. What you're saying is they don't see the significant, and you're right. Like, is it a couple hundred bucks? Is that really my opportunity cost? Like my peace of mind, like at the end of the day, we're also optimizing for peace of mind, but there's another problem there. There's also that lack of control. And again, if they stop working, they don't have something or a vehicle that's working for them. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about that syndication. Like, why is it more powerful to invest as a limited partner? Let's talk some numbers too. Maybe you can come up with a case study, like residential small home bringing a couple hundred bucks a month, where you know, a professional just doesn't see it versus like, okay, how much money do I got to put in and how much do I get in return? Did you say cost segregation? Did you say like, let's, I want to compare the two, just really bring that point home. Cause as I'm listening to this, I have so many people in my family and my life that I'm like, okay, I want you to go listen to what Nancy said, you know, looks like you, comes from the same cloth, you know, student of the game. I mean, I can think of so many people that I could shout out this episode. So I'm just so happy that you're here, but share that contrast or difference between the two. So we really understand that we're not talking apples to apples here.
Okay. So let's take my single family, for instance. Yeah. Okay. I'll just use that as an example. So
I love it.
So return wise, after all expenses, right? I'm talking about all, including budgeting for CapEx and property management and stuff. You know, it's currently rented for $1,800. It probably nets, after all expenses, I would say, you know, $300 a month with that property, which is pretty good. You know, I think overall for one unit is very good. But if you just have that one property and you're like, okay, this is supposed to make me rich and I'm supposed to retire tomorrow, you'll be very disappointed, right? Yeah. Real estate is a slow game overall. Yes, there's many benefits, including equity buildup, right? And debt pay down as your tenants are paying that down. So you are building wealth that way. But the immediate effects in terms of the cash flow, you get $300 a month.
Like cool. $3,600 a year. That's not really...
Okay. Cool. You know, needle, right? that doesn't even pay for my child's daycare, 2 months of daycare. You know what I'm saying? Like, to think of it that way, you're like, well, I could, you know, especially as a high income professional, as a doctor, you're like, shoot, I could work 2 extra shifts and make that. Like, why would I spend all that time and stuff to get that minimal return? So that's kind of the mindset that I go through. And I think a lot of doctors and high earning professionals go through is like, is that worth all that work? Like, I could just work more and be done and earn even more than that, you know,
and not have to come home and look at comparables from what my realtor sent me and all that. Okay, cool. So got it. Show us the other side, Nancy, please show us the other side. What does the other side look like?
Right. So let's talk about a syndication. So let's just say you invest in a 200 unit apartment deal, which is very similar to a deal that I'm invested in. So the metrics are a little bit different, similar, but different in the commercial space. So the key metrics I would say is cash on cash, very similar. Most of them currently, like it's called preferred return is usually what it's called. So basically the investors get a certain percentage before anything is split to the sponsors or the general partners. And after that, there's usually a split, typically a 70-30 split for most indications that I've seen and that I've invested in. So in that case, because you have 200 units, right? Even if one tenant or 10% of the tenants move out, you're still cash flowing. You're not going from 100 to zero like we talk about. But in terms of actual numbers, typically the deals that I've invested in that I've seen is usually about a 7% preferred return. Sometimes you could get up to 9 or 10 without the upside at the end. So you have both the cash flow, and then when you sell the property, you get that upside. And that's where the majority of the returns come in, is when you sell it and that profit.
I know what you mean by the upside, but could you describe it? Again, I know we touched on what syndication is, but we didn't talk about kind of the lifespan of that investment and like the exit. Can you just talk about that to bring that home? Cause I think that'd be key if I'm listening closely.
Yeah. So most syndications have a lifespan as you're talking about. So there's a business plan they're going to carry out for a certain number of years. It ranges, but on average, I would say it's about 5 to 7 years. Sometimes it could be shorter depending on what the market cycle is and whether they want to exit early, or it could be longer if they need to. But I would say 5 to 7 years is pretty average. So during that period of say 5 years for a hold, you would get the cash flow. Like if you're investing in something that cash flows, right? You don't necessarily have to. You could invest in a new build and that doesn't cash flow, and you just get hopefully the upside at the end, meaning that the upside just means that when they sell it, they should make a profit, right? That's the whole business plan. And you get to split that profit in the sale. So just like when you sell a house, like your own rental property, the cash flow is like, you know, a couple $100, but it's really when you sell it, you're hoping for that appreciation to get that big check in. What I like to say is cash flow kind of keeps you afloat, but it's really, you know, you're playing for that big game at the end to get that equity, that profit at sale. So there's the cash flow and then the equity, and then the profit at sale is what I'm talking about when I talk about the exit or the upside.
Perfect.
So most deals that I've invested in gives you something called an equity multiple of about 2. And what that means is that within that time frame, say it's 5 years, and they said that the equity multiple is 2, if you invest, say, $100,000, you should expect the projected return after that 5-year period should be that you double your money. So say you invested 100, you should get 200 back. So you basically, your initial 100, and then you made 100 in profit. And that 100.
Does that include the upside? Sorry to interrupt there. I just want to be clear on that. So in total, you basically, it sounds like you would project it, double your money, and let's say 5-year term. Let's say that is what you would consider a respectable investment in return.
Yeah. Right. And that doubling in money includes the cash flow that you're receiving throughout the project, as well as that profit at sale. So it's the total return on money.
Love that example. So now, and I really appreciate how you broke that down. Like, truthfully, it really, because I don't think I've ever had anybody like really break it down that way. And I think that now the light bulb is like, oh, now you got my attention. Because, you know, my problem or issue that I have, it's not really an issue. I shouldn't call it that. I like to be very clear on how I choose my words. So I think what I'm trying to highlight is that when you say real estate, we see how deep we've gone into the type of real estate. And based on your lifestyle, based on your wants, right now, I think this is going to be an episode that's really going to cater to what you just said, a professional who already makes really good money, a doctor like yourself, who doesn't really have that time to even, or even they don't even think the opportunity cost might be worth it on the residential side, you know, to, because it's only a couple $100. But what you're saying, you said the equity multiple, is that what you're calling it? Equity multiple of 2, right? And that, again, case by case will change.
Exactly.
But it's very interesting for you to call that out, because now you might have the attention of other people like yourself who are thinking of like, well, I'm not getting that in my savings account for sure. I'm not getting that in the stock market. And I'm certainly not getting that. I mean, I guess what are the alternatives, I think, right? I'm certainly not getting that at my work, right? Wow. So now we're here. And so you've kind of, okay, you're kind of all in now, like limited partner. Where does that bring the Clear Vision Capital Group though? Because, you know, did you shift gears? You talk about preferred returns as a limited partner. You get what you expect. You have your equity. Ultimately, you get your cash flow. You're good. You live your life. Now you're starting to take things to the next level further. Let me ask you why.
It's exactly kind of what I was alluding to. People were asking me, like, how do you do it? And they weren't so much interested in the act of like buying singles, doubles. They were like, that's too much work. Like, forget it. But when I started telling about the syndications, their eyes pop open. It's like, that's an idea. I just want to park my money somewhere, right? Especially as doctors and a lot of professionals, I find that, and this is how I was, you know, years ago. It's like, I just want to set the money and forget it. Like, financial advisor, take it, you know, do whatever you want with it. So that's kind of their mentality, is like they know they should invest in real estate. Everyone keeps telling them, right? Millionaires are made from real estate, but they don't want that hassle. So that's when they caught their attention, and people kept telling me, tell me more, tell me more. So I would have dinners with people, have long conversations on the phone explaining this stuff. And frankly, I was just tired of repeating myself over and over and over and spending my precious time, you know, telling the same thing. So that's when I eventually started, you know, creating a small video series for specifically geared towards physicians to explain the stuff that I'm talking about specifically.
Good for you.
And so that's where the website came. I was like, you know, I know very good sponsors. I know how to vet them. And I want to bring these pre-vetted deals to this group who doesn't necessarily have the same passion or the time or the interest in learning it in depth like I would, but they just want to go with something they trust. to invest their money in. And that's where Clear Vision Investing, my company, came about. It's just, I bring pre-vetted deals. So if we go back to the airplane analogy, I am not the pilot and I am not the, I am still the passenger because I invest in all the deals that I bring to my investors, but I'm also kind of the flight attendant. You know, I make sure that their needs are served, that they get the education that they need, that they know how to analyze these deals and know what they're investing in. So that's kind of, I'm kind of like the middleman between the sponsors who actually run these deals full time and then the investors serving that bridge between them.
That's so neat. How did you, first of all, I think you're in such a beautiful position, by the way, to just, you're like a quarterback without being a quarterback. You're like own the team. So let me ask you, how did you do this? Because I'm very curious. I've never really heard it. Like, what would you call your, I know you're the founder, but you wouldn't call yourself a co-GP, right?
I would be a co-GP because you in are? Addition to bringing the investors in, right? I basically do investors relations as well as help the main sponsor manage deals, certain asset management. So I'm part of that.
I'm glad that you said that.
Yeah. But I am also a passive investor. So every deal that I bring to my audience and my investor, I personally invest in it.
Okay. That's key right there.
There is an alignment of interest, right? Because I would never bring a deal to people that I wouldn't invest in just to say, come on in, you know, come on, bring your capital. Yeah. There has to be an alignment of interest. So every deal that I bring, I personally invest my money into it. And I also make sure that there's an alignment of interest with the main sponsor as well, in terms of how the deal is structured, putting their own capital in. So we really go to leaps and bounds based on our network and everything to make sure that these are legitimate deals, you know, that I would personally put my money into.
So I love that, Nancy, because you kind of opened up the door to kind of the when you say sponsor, I know that we haven't really truly defined how it is, but from what I understand, and maybe you can help Experiment Nation here clearly understand, is there can be multiple different roles that sponsors can have. Like, one might be really good with the numbers, they're a GP for that. One might be, hey, he's a super connector, or she's a super connector, he just brings. And then one is in acquisitions, and it sounds like you're bringing that role of kind of that bridge of like, hey, listen, I have a bunch of doctors, you know, who literally know me, have trust in me, therefore I will also guide them. I like how you said, like, kind of the, you know, flight attendant, like you're also guiding them, and at the same time you have direct relationships with the pilot. But you don't necessarily need to be in the pilot seat, but you are also have stake and skin in the game. Did I paraphrase that correctly?
You said it correctly. I mean, perfectly. I would say, you know, just to kind of clarify, is when you do these large deals, it's not me. I'm gonna, you know, it's not the I am mentality anymore. It's really a we. It's a team sport. So as you said, there's different team players. So going back to this airplane analogy, the pilots, the passengers, and then the flight attendant, right? We're talking about. But then you also have the air traffic controller. You also have the people all around making sure that everything runs smoothly, right? That you don't see on the plane. And those are like the brokers, the lenders, making sure that all that, the property management, you don't see all that behind the scenes, but they're all playing a role into getting that plane to its destination, into getting that deal into its destination. So, you know, as a co-sponsor or co-GP, I'm assisting on both ends, right? I'm making sure that everyone has their drinks, they're settled in the back of the plane, and the ride is as smooth as possible. At the same time, I'm part of the team in managing this deal, right? I might not be the exact one who's like looking at the renovations every day, but I play certain key roles in terms of making sure that the properties are going on time, asset management, as we're talking about, and other things like that, which play a key role in the whole team and the whole process.
Wow. So here you find yourself controlling an asset with a team, which is amazing, and still in control of your dollars and your investments, which is such a great position to be in. If you were to look back as to, you know, how you picked and there's just so many pieces that need to be placed strategically into place. And again, I don't think, you know, this episode is necessarily for the person who, like, you know, it could be, I think there's an opportunity to say, hey, like, you could going to do what Nancy did, which is phenomenal. But I think it's also opening up the eyes that, hey, you know what? I want to be friends with Nancy. I want to know Nancy. I want to work with Nancy. I want to invest with Nancy. But for the other person, maybe a smaller percentage who's like, wow, like how did Nancy do that? Those co-sponsors, you know, how do you, did you invest in some of their limited partnerships to foster relationship and then say, hey, let's go on a deal together? Like, what does that look like when you think of like putting together a team? And this, now we're talking straight leadership and like really building a company. Like, what did that next step look like if you want to drop a proof of concept for Experiment Nation?
Absolutely. It's all about relationships, as I got to say. You know, it's not, you're going to go online and click on a sponsor and then you're like, let's partner up. It's a marriage. Whether you're a co-sponsor or you are a limited partner, when you join a deal, it's a marriage for 5 to 7 years for that duration. So before you, you know, so to say, like hop into bed with someone, like make sure you do your due diligence. And it's the same with finding these sponsors. You know, we do our due diligence to make sure that they have a good track record, a clean record, you know, they're transparent. Their values align with ours, right? In terms of how we view things. So those are all important. I think to reiterate, it's not so much about the deal. Yes, the deal is important, but the most important aspect is the sponsor, because they're the one who's going to be driving that deal. If you have an experienced and awesome operator, they could really, you know, turn lemons into lemonade and make it really sweet. But if you have a bad operator, it could go south the other way. So really getting to know and vetting the sponsor is key.
Do you remember what it was? I know it's, again, it's hard to sometimes summarize. Oh, it was that one conversation. It was that one phone call. It was that one deal. It was that one meetup. Like, I think it's what you said. It's an accumulation. I'm going to paraphrase what I think you're saying is it's an accumulation of experiments, as we would call them in the lab, right? Successful experiments. Is there anything that stands out if there's another little Nancy out there, and little in the sense of, as in like, I love the strides that Nancy that I'm looking at right now on camera or listening to on the podcast has taken. If I was trying to get in her corner or get her attention or rub shoulders with her, you know, for another, you know, the younger version of yourself, like what would you tell that other Nancy to do that you think is probably the, like a big kind of domino kind of push for kind of getting into this space?
I would say the relationships, again, nurture those relationships, go out and network, get out of your comfort zone, and go meet people, because you realize it's such a small world. You know, this person knows this person, and then this person knows this person, and all of a sudden you could be connected to your next deal or your next sponsor or whatever. It's all about relationships. This real estate business is relationships. It's not so much what are the numbers. Yes, that's important. But as we see over and over again, whether it be relationships with your broker, your lender, the seller, your investors, it's all about relationships. And when people invest their money, for instance, in these deals, the deal is important, but they're really investing in you as the sponsor or as a person bringing them in. So yeah, just keep your eyes open and keep those relationships, whether it be professional or even personal, you know, because I think that family, those friends, those close friends are just as important because they impact your life even more significantly, in my opinion.
Such a great segue. You're really good at this, by the way. We got to get you on the other side of the mic. The segue, you talk about impact others. You're not just doing this for limited partners or co-GPs. You also have kind of a bigger vision, pun intended, I guess there, where you're also helping out others find site across the world. Can you describe that a little bit? Because I really wanted to, you know, let this be the icing on the cake out of all that you're doing, just to understand the kind of impact that you can have when you put yourself in the position that you're in. Can you talk about that, what you're doing as well?
Absolutely. Thank you for that lovely segue into this. But as an eye doctor and surgeon, one of my big passions is vision, obviously. I've seen how being blind can just cripple your life and how restoring vision or just having vision just brings life back and brings your dignity and identity back. So how I actually got interested in pursuing a career in ophthalmology was I witnessed the miracle of cataract surgery for the first time in a developing country. I had been there on kind of a teaching English kind of trip, and then in Ghana, and there was a medical team coming in, and one of the things I did was vision screenings and cataract surgery. So the first time I saw that man who had come, traveled long ways, having someone bring him, you know, because he couldn't see, to hold him across the mountains to come here, and was waiting in line for that cataract surgery. The moment he took off that patch, he let a smile off his face, and literally being hunched over, I don't know for how many years, he literally straightened up like a flower is to a sun, like they've been wilted and straightened up. And you could just see the light in his face, the life, you know, just jumping up and down and being able to walk away independently. So having vision, it's not just about vision, you know, this is like kind of like a pun, but it really impacts and has a ripple effect on multiple areas of a country, a person. For instance, like people are able to return back to work, so it has economic consequences. Children are able to go back to school, because often in these countries, when one person is blind, two people are affected because someone has to take care of that blind person. Oh. So often children cannot go to school and learn. So you're impacting not just someone who can't work, but also someone who needs to take care of them. So by curing one, you almost free both of them. And then, you know, a really poignant story that just made me like burst into tears was this mother had given birth to her baby and she was blind. So she had never seen her baby ever before. She got cataract surgery and was able to see her daughter, now 5 years old, for the first time. I mean, can you imagine that? So those are the kind of things that drives me, and I've seen it in my own practice for the past decade, doing sight-saving eye surgeries to be able to give the gift of sight to people. So now my mission is to basically cure preventable blindness worldwide, because believe it or not, most causes of blindness are preventable, such as a pair of glasses, cataract surgery. So people are needlessly blind. I'm not talking about something that we have to spend, you know, millions of dollars coming up with some research in the lab to cure. You know, it's something as simple as a 5-10 minute cataract surgery that costs a couple bucks. So that's kind of my mission. And so part of the profits from my company and my real estate has gone to this cause because I believe in it so much. So that is kind of a summary of what I'm up to with doing impact work with real estate.
Oh my gosh. I'm like almost getting emotional just because, no, I mean, I'm serious. It's just so beautiful to see the impact that you're like, you've taken the next level. You could have just, you know, settled. And even using the word settled is just ridiculous to even think about, because you're not settling. Like, you committing 10 years plus of school to have this profession is, I take it back, because you guys know I'm very, I like to be very diligent in how I choose my words. The word is not settled. You're overachieving yet again. Considering that you're already an overachiever in your career, you didn't stop there. You built your own company. You called it Clear Vision Capital Group. And then you're not only helping other, you know, doctors invest with you to give them the financial freedom, but then you're also taking part of those profits to have a positive social impact. I mean, we haven't had this, but I'm coining it right now. You are a hero of the lab. I really want to just, I'll make sure that my team really highlights this in this episode, because it truly is so beautiful and fascinating, and, you know, so much respect. And I'm just very, I'm motivated now. I'm motivated and I'm humbled to be in this lab with you because of like the real impact that you said. I mean, just you describing that man and that mother, wow, that's I'm really, really proud of you, Nancy. Well, this is awesome.
Thank you. I appreciate it. No, it's kind of my life's work, and I'm grateful to have this stream of income coming in from the real estate to donate to this cause. And we've partnered up with a great organization, because the thing that sets us apart is, with this organization, we are not just flying in and out like a group of doctors yeah, we're going to go on a mission trip for 2 weeks and then, you know, perform a bunch of surgeries and then fly out. Then what do you leave? You leave a whole group that still needs surgery. What we're trying to do is, yes, we're doing that, but we're also teaching them how to do these and also creating a sustainable system where we're training the local people, including a lot of women, how to screen people, how to, you know, run a for-profit vision center so that they could self-fund this. So you're not depending on the donors to keep feeding money. It's almost like you donate once and it feeds itself to self-sustain. And I think that's what's so beautiful about what we're doing.
So are you also, I'm just so for the sake of context, are you also, is it helping fund other doctors there as well? I'm just trying to understand the impact when you say those, the clear vision kind of, I guess, is it a clinic? I'm just trying to understand.
Yeah. So it's multiple fronts. One is funding surgeries, obviously is a huge need there. So funding the actual cataract surgeries that we do, but the other goal is also to create a sustainable cycle of doing this, right? Because if you depend on someone coming from the US for 2 weeks just to do hundreds of surgeries, you're still leaving a whole population behind until the next group comes to operate on them. So what we do is, in addition to funding the actual surgeries, we create training for the locals, right, to be able to learn these techniques and to do these vision screenings. And then we funnel them to the hospital. So creating these, what we call for-profit vision centers, meaning that it's like an eye clinic, you know, what they go around in the villages and do screenings and all that to see who qualifies. And then we funnel them to the hospital for these surgeries. So it creates a economic sustainability for them, right? And to earn a living, but at the same time doing good and supporting this cause.
Got it. And just curious, is the vision screening a preventative approach or more of a funnel to help people kind of get to where they need to get to?
Right now is a funnel because there's such that need. It's not like in the United States, you know, where I know my daughter's entering school and they require vision screening. They don't quite have that yet. It's more like who's really blind and really needs the surgery, going to screen for those people.
Gotcha. Wow. Well, you talk about bringing it full circle. I can't thank you enough for bringing insight and enlightenment in our world as well. You're just the vision queen here because you're giving us insights in the lab. You're giving insights to your doctors that you work with, and you're giving vision to the people who really need it the most. So I can't thank you enough for spending the time in the lab with us. You know, you said so many great things. I want to make sure that our community gets a chance to, again, tap into your network. You know, what is the best way for people to get in touch with you? I know you have a beautiful site here called clearvisioninvesting.com. Is that the best place that we should check you out? Where else can we get in touch with you if we want to really tap into what you're doing and the impact that you're having?
Yeah, the best way is the website. Everything is on there, including what we do with the vision. There's a lot of resources for people who want to learn more about passive investing. We have a free course that people can sign up for to get an introduction to these syndications and passive investing, as well as a whole page on glossary of terms that you might come across in the commercial real estate space, and also a due diligence checklist for anyone who's interested in looking at a deal and seeing what questions they could ask, because that's often a question I get asked a lot is, I don't know what to ask. Well, we have a whole checklist for you that questions that I ask and our investors are told to ask to really vet these sponsors, the deal, the market. So just hop on there. You could also book a call with me on the website as well.
It's wonderful. And guys, you guys know this is brought to you by investitalent.com. We are a digital marketing agency. And I have to say, this website, guys, is as clear as it gets. It's really nice, like really great marketing. Your team has done a great job. Make sure you guys check that out. If you're driving, as I always say, keep your hands on the wheel. We will have this in the show notes, clearvisioninvesting.com. Just like that, Nancy Nguyen for the win. We are out.
If you're a real estate professional, a real estate agent, a real estate investor, a lender, a multifamily syndicator, a contractor, you name it, and you're looking to grow your online presence, but you have no idea how to get started or simply don't have the time, at Invested Talent, we help real estate professionals extend their current business to social media. Why is this important? Without this, you wouldn't be listening to this show, and your own host, Ruben Kanya, and his team would not have done deals they've done today. As a matter of fact, social media has helped us keep this show together, which now exceeds $1 billion worth of real estate from our guests collectively. That's right. Our reputation, opportunities, partnerships, and most importantly, real estate transactions were started directly from social media. If you're a real estate professional and you lack an existence on a media platform, Invested Talent can help. Simply go to investedtalent.com/social media and make sure you click the Get in Touch button to get in touch with our team. Again, that's investedtalent.com/social media and get in touch with our team. You focus on being the brand and we'll help you build it. Now, if you know anything about The Lab, you know that we like to give practical advice. So if you feel that this podcast was of any value to you, please be sure to leave us a review on iTunes by going directly to the podcast app. From the show's page, scroll all the way down and leave us a review. If you're watching this on YouTube, please subscribe by clicking the subscribe button and leave us a comment. Lastly, and most importantly, share this episode with a friend you feel will benefit this episode the most. Remember, there's a you and I in build. Let's build, y'all.